city. Flickering dirty neon over alleys mean and dirty streets.
Alleys mean and dirty streets. Hello, everybody. From a nightclub at the end of the world, this is Michael C. Rupert, Tracker of Truth, with you one more Sunday on the 8th, a very cold 8th of December, 2013. Yeah, here we are. Need to catch up. It was an amazing, amazing show last week. Repercussions were far and wide. We had Hadrick Penry, Tony Muga on, and it was beautiful to see the energy and the synergy that occurred after that show. We were pleased to, you know, have a clip from, or to talk about Gary Null's great documentary, Knocking at the Devil's Door, wherein Chris Busby was very clear just a couple months after the incident that there were no fuel pools left at Fukushima. The FOIA documents are now being read seriously in a great many places. There are several batches of them. But the work of Hadrick Penry, he was interviewed by Global Research, which has also appeared here on PRN. He did a fabulous job on that show, and now everybody's getting, we need to go look at these. And I am just really impressed and grateful for the reach we have. And actually, what we did here on this show last week appears to have been a watershed moment. People were actually saying my name. He took the documents to Mike Rupert. Wow, that's pretty cool. So high fives and props to Tony, and keep it up, and to all everybody that's doing great work out there on Fukushima nuclear hot seat, with Libby Halevi, who's going to be on the show probably this month, if not early in January, to Mimi Gurman in Portland. The Radcast is coming up. There's a lot of good work coalescing around this stuff, even as the world's going crazy. I should say at the top of the show, and I will acknowledge this, but I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it. Nelson Mandela, rest in peace. You are a grandfather now. You walked a long, wonderful, courageous life. You gave us many messages of peace and strength and courage. You accomplished great things, and you had a long walk in your 93 years. I cannot think about Nelson Mandela without thinking about Steve Biko, and I wish them both, and I honor them as grandfathers. And a lot of people might have been expecting me to do a long Paine, P-A-E-N, ode to both Mandela and Biko, but I hear them both in from their place as grandfathers saying, no, you have more important things to talk about. I thank you for your life. That's not the topic we're going on tonight, but I do acknowledge the passing of a great soul. Life's getting easier for me now a little bit, because when I look at the world and I see that this week, and the story's been up in a great many places on my Facebook page, the IAEA sat down and made an announcement that it was going to be okay for TEPCO to release, not a little bit, but all of the highly radioactive water that they are storing at Fukushima directly into the Pacific Ocean. And the IAEA was saying, basically, that's the best course available. Well, that's ugly. That's the point at which you begin to realize that nothing is under control, but you also begin to realize that the human race is now currently overwhelmed. And as I look back on the change of the Mayan calendar, December 21st of last year, I think that may have actually been what transpired around that point, although we're, you know, just getting our clear pictures of it now. That was at the point at which the human race lost complete control of its ability to do anything in the current situation. We're going to deal with that tonight in a way that I think is going to be helpful. But, you know, here's some other things. You know, we've seen the stories this week that the air in Shanghai is so thick you can't see across the street. They had to shut down the city. Now, that's because of course, industrial pollution, the fact that they have to sell like 20,000, 30,000 new cars a month to maintain growth, that they're burning coal hand over fist. Same thing in Beijing. And we saw a story that happened last week where China instituted a vicious crackdown, seizing 600 barbecues in Beijing to help combat air pollution. That is about as effective as we are being with Fukushima. There is a story which came, and I'm not sure where it came first. I believe it was NHK that broke the story first, but it was picked up by ENE News, and it was picked up by NHK World did it December 6th. The highest radiation levels ever, ever measured outside a reactor, I believe it was reactor 2 or 1, at Fukushima, Daiichi, picking it up. Also, Asahi Shimbun had it, but Zero Hedge did a great job. TEPCO found radiation levels of 25 sieverts. That's not microsieverts. That's not millisieverts. That's 25 sieverts an hour on a duct which connects reactor buildings and a 120-meter-tall ventilation pipe, which we already know has been cracked and pulled loose from its moorings. That's high enough radiation, according to all of the stories, to kill within 20 minutes of exposure. Clearly, the situation at Fukushima is not improving. Clearly, as you look around the world, nothing is improving. Nothing is under control. And, you know, really, if I sit back and try to be useful to you guys, I am not being helpful to you if I focus on things which have nothing to do with the imminent causes of our imminent death from a great many levels. Climate change is a great topic tonight. The whole world's kind of freezing tonight because the jet stream is totally out of control. Britain has been hammered mercilessly, so has Denmark, northern Germany. Low countries, houses falling into the ocean. Do we use the word biblical? Might be appropriate tonight, given that we're going to be spending some time with Terence McKenna. There was another story that from AP this week from December 3rd. Experts warn of ground seeking at Fukushima plant reactor building, and other stories which followed that said that the earth underneath the plant is beginning to ebb and flow with the tide weakening, which means that, of course, all the water that's being used there has weakened the soil substrata to the point where what we have feared for a long time or known would happen for a long time is imminent also, which is like there might be a huge mudslide and everything there goes out of control. So I am not in a place tonight where I even want to delve into stories, even those which are coming up on Facebook now about big riots in the Ukraine, blah, blah, blah. They are total distractions now. We are spinning around the drain. Nothing is under control. The human race has been overwhelmed and overrun. And I knew this time would come. This is another evolution for me. When I left CollapseNet in May of 12, you know, it was because I could no longer feel that I was being of service, and it was driving me crazy to read all these news stories about economics and blah, 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 and try to glean anything useful for you when my knowing and my experience says we're not going to find any meaning in that anymore. So what do we look to find meaning in? So I've been snowed in heavily. I got out for 12 hours yesterday. We had a light snow and heavy winds last night, which blew snow over the tire tracks, the 500 yards that it is, 400 to 500 yards from where my car is, out to the main road, which is clear. And I don't know when I'm getting out, but that's happening all over the country tonight as Arctic air is being sucked into much lower latitudes with extreme ferocity. It's 2 weeks until winter starts, and I'm looking at extreme low temperatures here. It's going to be well below zero tonight, probably 12, 15 below tomorrow night, and I'm dealing with it one day at a time, like everything else is. But it is ludicrous for me to even pretend, if I am of service to you guys who have been following me for so long, to say that we can bring any of this under control. We can't. We're circling the drain. What is the drain? Where does it go? What's on the other side? Now, that's stuff worth talking about, and that's where I've been living as I've been snowbound for many days now. Me and Rags. Rags is fine. Rags is snoozing on the floor. He's just had a big dinner over by my feet. Something came up this week that reminded me of a seminal moment for me that occurred in Paris in 2003 when I was attending my first peak oil conference in Paris. That's where I met Colin Campbell and all of the greats, Matt Simmons, everybody. And there was a Dutch economist there who said, his name was Martin van Moerik, and he gave a really good presentation in 2003. And this was the year that I came up with the awareness that until you change the way money works, you change nothing. Even now, changing the way money works is not going to change the outcome from a material sense for the world we live in now. But Martin van Moerik made a profound statement. He said, I have concluded that it may not be profitable to slow decline. In 2003, seminal moment, like I was struck by a bolt of lightning. Now I'm in a place where I still seek to be your scout. And what I'm seeing and what I'm feeling and what I'm aware of is that we are at an omega point. And you're going to hear about that tonight. It's a term coined by Terrence McKenna, who I consider to be, well, I've said it before, I said it on a radio show this week, we'll have up, that if I were to make a Mount Rushmore, I wouldn't do that to Mother Earth, but imagine Mount Rushmore would be George Orwell, Aldous Huxley, Terrence McKenna, and Graham Hancock. McKenna was so right. He was so profoundly correct before his death in 2000 of a very aggressive brain tumor. And he had so much so clear, and we're going to hear from, he's going to join us here in the nightclub at the end of the world tonight, and I've got a special song that I'm going to play for him at the end of the show. So what we're going to do first is listen to a very short clip of Terrence McKenna before we go into a longer 10-minute clip, and then I'm going to try to weave this together in a way that's hopefully going to make sense, because I am coming closer to being more at peace with anything since I first drew breath as a human being in this body. And that would be the understanding that I'm going to help to try to guide us to through the course of the show tonight. But let's hear this this first short clip from Terrence McKenna, Reclaim Your Mind. Let's hear it.
Term, which just simply means we have to stop consuming our culture. We have to create culture. Don't watch TV. Don't read magazines. Don't even listen to NPR. Create your own roadshow. The nexus of space and time where you are now is the most immediate sector of your universe. And if you're worrying about Michael Jackson or Bill Clinton or somebody else, then you are disempowered. You're giving it all away to icons. Icons which are maintained by an electronic media, so that you want to dress like X or have lips like Y or something. This is shit-brained, this kind of thinking. That is all cultural diversion. And what is real is you and your friends and your associations, your highs, your orgasms, your hopes, your plans, your fears. And we're told no. We're unimportant. We're peripheral. Get a degree. Get a job. Get a this. Get a that. And then you're a player. You don't even want to play in that game. You want to reclaim your mind and get it out of the hands of the cultural engineers who want to turn you into a half-baked moron consuming all this trash that's being manufactured out of the bones of a dying world. Where is that at?
The bones of a dying world. That was a short clip of Terrence McKenna. By the way, if you want to delve into Terrence McKenna, go to YouTube. Just type in T-E-R-R-E-N-C-E, capital M, small c, capital K-E-N-N-A. You will find more Terrence McKenna, and just jump into the rabbit hole. Watch one video, go to the next. There's a great one of 5 hours of him at his best, which was so prescient, so aware of the situation in which we find ourselves now. And he has an amazing viewpoint on this. And we have talked on this show, and I have talked in a lot of my writings, a lot about consciousness being the determiner of physical reality. Now, Terence McKenna was one of the most experienced psychonauts in the world. I don't hold a candle to him or Graham Hancock or Leary. I have done ayahuasca 3 times. I started with DMT 6 or 7, a 5-MeO, a 2-hour DMT journey. Included in that, I have, of course, done mushrooms, and I have participated with peyote in Native American ceremonies 2 times. And that's enough for me to know that there is another side. There are huge realities out there beyond what can be perceived with the 3D senses. And this is the cocoon, if you will. This is the prison of matter, which McKenna so clearly talked about. Consciousness needing to break out of, evolve. And here hopefully will come not full circle, but maybe another coil up the spiral of evolution by the end of the show tonight. But essentially, one of the things he talks about is eschatology. Now, for those of you who are not familiar with what eschatology means, E-S-C-H-A-T-O-L-O-G-Y, is a part of theology concerned with what are believed to be the final events of history, the ultimate destiny of humanity. This concept is referred to as the end of the world or end time for this paradigm, for this level of consciousness. Eschatology, you're going to hear him talk about it, is the end of everything. We are at the end of history. And that sounds like this impenetrable brick wall until and or unless one acknowledges that there might be levels of consciousness and levels of reality beyond what we are aware of. And he makes a great point that history is moving faster and faster. And that's important. I think we all know and can see this, but as a simple point, he says, hey, for the first couple billion years, there wasn't even atomic reaction going on. The universe was just plasma, and then some atoms formed. That was an event. And then you come forward to biology and the appearance of life. Where in the space of 40,000 years, for 40,000 years, human beings chipped flints on one side only. The big historical event was that they started chipping on the other. Woohoo! But we all know that in roughly the 10,000 years of what we would call modern human history, time has speeded up. Not only has the human race mastered fire, we have mastered the matter that runs stars. Those are achievements of human consciousness. So I do not and cannot look at the human race as being some bunch of greedy, boneheaded bastards who just came here and messed everything up. We were having, if you will, a consciousness orgy, fully exploring the field of matter. And I think what you're going to hear, and we're going to play about a 10-minute clip from Terence McKenna before we go to the break here. And I think what you're going to understand about us is that we are consciousness, which, if you have had psychedelic experiences, which if you have had shamanic experiences with plants that were placed here for us, we are reverting, if you will, now to archaic mindsets because it's a survival instinct in the face of the imminent destruction of our habitat. But if you look at all of this, there is so much reality beyond where we are now, and we are at the point where a universe which craves novelty, and that is so important. Look at the novelty we're frenetically pursuing with all kinds of new amusements and distractions, and can we do this? And when a human spirit that operates at 8 megahertz or something, excuse me, 8 hertz, can plug into a computer that operates at 1.2 gigahertz, what we find is that consciousness and experience can experience things hundreds of thousand times faster thousands of times faster than the human body is capable of dealing with. In other words, we are reaching the limits of matter. And this is the cusp, this is the drain, this is the event horizon, which we have arrived at now. And there will be something on the other side. So let's listen to Terrence McKenna here for a few minutes, then we'll go to a break, and I'm going to try to make some sense of this for you for the rest of the show. Here's Terrence McKenna. Pay attention. Take notes.
Measured on a calendar. And, you know, a really common, ordinary way to describe the times that we're living in is that they're very, very chaotic, filled with acts of unspeakable evil, and at the same time, there's this sort of buzz and thrust of optimism. Everything from a guy like Peter Schwartz talking about the long wave, the right. Big booming economy, breakthroughs in educational levels and qualities of life. But it's definitely a dynamic where you've got extremes of good and evil in that way. Would you talk a little bit about the relationship between that dynamic as we go forward and the novelty continues to climax?
Well, novelty is not necessarily good or nice. Novelty is complex. That's what it is. And so I see really a concatenation of tendencies and forces here at the end. It's only going to get weirder. The level of contradiction is going to rise excruciatingly, even beyond the excruciating present levels of contradiction. I think it's just going to get weirder and weirder and weirder, and finally it's going to be so weird that people are going to have to talk about how weird it is. And at that point, novelty theory can come out of the woods, because eventually people are going to say, what the hell is going on? It's just too nuts. It's not enough to say it's nuts. You have to explain why it's so nuts. So between now and 2012, the next 14 years, I look for the invention of artificial life, the cloning of human beings, possible contact with extraterrestrials, possible human immortality, and at the same time, appalling acts of brutality, genocide, race baiting, homophobia, famine, starvation, because the systems which are in place to keep the world sane are utterly inadequate to the forces that have been unleashed. The collapse of the socialist world, the rise of the internet, these are changes so immense nobody could imagine them ever happening. And now that they have happened, nobody even bothers to mention what a big deal it is. The fact that there is no such thing as the Soviet Union, people never talk about it anymore. But when I was a kid, the notion that that would ever change was beyond conceiving. So the good news is that as primates, we're incredibly adaptable to change. Put us in a desert, we survive. Put us in the jungle, we survive. Under Hitler, we survive. Under Nixon, we survive. We can put up with about anything, and it's a good thing because we're going to be tested to the limits. The breakdown of anything, and this is why the right wing is so alarmed, because what they see going on is the breakdown of all tradition, all order, all sanctioned norms of behavior. And they're quite right that it's happening, but they're quite wrong to conclude that it should be resisted or is somehow evil. The mushroom said to me once, it said, this is what it's like when a species prepares to depart for the stars. You don't depart for the stars under calm and orderly conditions. It's a fire in a madhouse. And that's what we have, the fire in the madhouse at the end of time. This is what it's like when a species prepares to move on to the next dimension. The entire destiny of all life on the planet is tied up in this. We are not acting for ourselves or from ourselves. We happen to be the point species on a transformation that will affect every living organism on this planet at its conclusion.
Pause for a second. I see how with Jenkins calling it galactic cosmology, it's like our home continues to expand. We've gone from the village to the nation state to the planet.
Now we're ready to take on the big picture.
So let's just talk about the conclusions of the archaic mind, what it reaches.
Well, the great watershed difference between the archaic understanding and what is called scientific materialism is the archaic mind understood, in fact perceived, that nature is conscious. Nature is alive. Nature is an organism full of intent. The goal of the archaic mind is to connect with, communicate with, and align itself to this greater Gaian holism, which is sometimes called nature, the great spirit, the realm of the ancestors. But this is what the archaic mind understood and was comfortable with. And in fact, it is true. Our own decision to view the universe as dead, as inanimate, as unintelligent, allowed us, permitted us to dissect it, use it, and deny its validity outside of human purpose. Now the consequences of living like that is coming back to haunt us. You know, we have almost destroyed our home. We have almost cut the earth from beneath our own feet. So this impulse toward the Gaelanic and the archaic is a survival instinct. At this point, we must give reverence and credence to nature and nature's methods, because no other methods will allow us to work our way out of the present mess we're in. High temperature, high energy resource extraction, commodification, mega agriculture, we're at the end of the rope for these things. So the archaic holds answers, but it only holds answers if we are willing to think of the universe as a living, intelligent entity with which we are in partnership, not set against, but that in fact we are a part of a morphogenetic intent and an unfolding reality that is larger than human understanding. Imagine, larger than human understanding.
Larger than human understanding. That's where we are right now. And we are at a place where we have run the limit. It's all not been wasted. One of the things that I have learned on my walk through my life, spiritually and emotionally, is that consciousness is not wasted, and this is what all of the great mystical teachings take, is that, let's say Buddhism, for example, would say that enlightenment would come when I realized, if I was looking at a rabbit in the snow outside my window, and I see a lot of them every day, and the rabbit was looking back at me, it was the same consciousness viewing itself from different places, which is so important to understand. And we have, and I have tried very hard over the course of the last 2 years on this show, to impart an awareness that there are things much bigger going on than we know, or which a three-dimensional Cartesian Newtonian consciousness would be able to comprehend. And this is the point of evolution. This is the point of singularity. This is what McKenna called the omega point, which is what we are at. We are at the eschatological point, the end of history, the end time, when history ceases to exist. And through that, and one of the great lines I heard from listening to so many hours of McKenna this week was that doing psychedelics is like doing calisthenics in preparation for the marathon at the end of the universe. And I had it because of the spiritual work I've done with and without drugs. I am aware that the spirit world is extremely real, that all of this reality exists out there. But we had to be we human beings, we this kind, this level of consciousness, from an ever expanding level of consciousness, had to be and go through all of this to commit all of the evils we have committed, and to be both victim and oppressor, to be both bad guy and good guy. To understand the limitations of matter. And we were about ready to transcend that. And he makes some very telling points, and I have nothing to do, and I don't endorse any singularity concept of who's the guy that invented the Moog synthesizer, Ray Kurzweil, that computers are going to pull us out. But if we think about it, our human bodies, our human minds are no longer able to keep up with what we are enabled to do consciously through the Internet. And I do agree with McKenna when he says that we are animals now, but we are animals in symbiosis with the machines that run our lives. I am with the computer screen in front of me. We are organisms, but we have outgrown the physical aspects of that. That's where we are. This is Michael C. Rupert, Tracker of Truth. We're at the bottom of the hour here on the Lifeboat Hour on the Progressive Radio Network. We will be right back, and we're going to try to pull this together even tighter for you in the second half of the show. We'll be right back. Don't let the fear turn my ears and eyes off. That song was It Would Be Strange from New White Trash's first CD, Double Wide, recorded in Venice, California. Michael Yost on guitar, Doug Lewis, Andy Kravitz, that was New White Trash. An important line, don't let the fear turn my ears and eyes off. There is a line that I've heard McKenna say, and I've also heard this used in indigenous practices, don't let your amazement paralyze you. As this stuff comes down, don't let the gridlock of your 3D mind, don't let it slow you down. Roll with it. Let go. Go into it. Jump into it with both feet. And that's why I'm so grateful, actually, for the psychedelic experiences that I have had, because I am really beginning to get the picture that when this omega point is reached, when history comes to an end, when the system has just explored everything, the evil, the banality, but also the art, also the good things that have been done in the material. When all of this comes to an end, that moment of elevation and indigenous and especially ancient indigenous teachings say that this is a spiral. It's not a circle that goes around and around. If there have been four human eras, this is the end of the fourth, that each time we complete the circuit, we go up another level. And I totally agree with McKenna now that is exactly what's happening. And it may well be the case that that's what happens for all of us. So it's not the end. It is a metamorphosis that is being experienced here, and it is a metamorphosis of consciousness transcending the material plane, which does sound an awful lot like prophecy. Terence McKenna recorded that long clip that we just played before the break in 1998. I believe it was late 99, he was diagnosed with a very aggressive brain tumor. He died in 2000. That was his last subject matter interview. I believe he gave one more with Art Bell, which I've listened to, which was just had to do with his health. But it is so amazing that he was able, and he stepped so far beyond. He was such an accomplished philosopher, a mind, a genius, a talent, who was fearless, fearless in the way that Henry Miller was fearless, fearless in the way that so many great people were fearless intellectually and emotionally and spiritually to really ask the fundamental underlying causative questions. Which, and he was so able to see and clearly articulate a reality, the reality in which we're living right now. So, you know, as I sit here snowbound and grateful for the things that I do have, I'm getting much less excited about reading all of the horrific stories that are piling up day after day after day after day on Facebook about pipelines and oil spills and new fracking endeavors. And, you know, I do still heartily support any place where human beings stand up in opposition to this, because that is a form of consciousness respecting the planet, respecting life, that is expressing itself, at a supremely critical moment. And I should mention that the Elsipetag and Mi'kmaq warriors in New Brunswick have won another victory. They stood up again under more challenging conditions with more brutal pressure by the Canadian government, the RCMP, Her Majesty's servants. And they won another injunction in New Brunswick. They are standing up against fracking, and I salute and I so heartily support all of the signs of a rising of indigenous First Peoples culture all over Turtle Island, all over the Western Hemisphere, all over the world. That's something that's extremely important, because I think that will those actions will have far-reaching impacts on where all 7 billion of us two-leggeds wind up when this is over. And I don't think we have that much longer. I got to tell you the truth. I could see this eschatological event, the end of history, coming by the end of this month. I'm not making a prediction. But at the rate things, and time is speeding up so rapidly, and time for us is a prison on this plane. But we could be through here in a very short period of time. You know, we have to be very clear when we look at things like, okay, it looks more and more based upon the empirical evidence that four spent fuel pools at Fukushima have been combusted and released already. They're going to dump all of that water into the Pacific Ocean. We have a continuing cascade of failures and problems at from Hanford to all kinds of nuclear waste storage facilities and other nuclear reactors around the world. Climate collapse is really getting into stride right now. We will have to bring Guy McPherson back soon. But we are swirling the drain, so I am progressively less and less interested in focusing on the small details, the deck chairs on the Titanic, and I would caution against getting too caught up in big breaking news stories, because none of them are dealing with the fact that we're doomed from a Cartesian Newtonian standpoint. And that's fine with me, because we have lived under that tyranny for far, far too long. So one of the big points that McKenna made over the last 4 or 5 years of his life was this novelty theory concept, and it's beautiful, that the universe is prejudiced towards, biased towards, novelty, new things. And when time was going slowly, a fin appearing on a fish, and a fish taking this horrendous leap, saying, maybe I can try to live on the land. Or human beings say, maybe we can fly through the air. Or any major steps like that were novel changes. And he makes the very clear point in several of his talks that, you know, everybody says it can't be done, it can't be done, it can't be done, until, of course, somebody does it. And then a second person does it, and then before long, everybody does it. That's the 100th monkey theory. Well, the 100th monkey theory no longer applies, just like I don't talk about collapse anymore, in that I'm not saying we reached the 100th monkey and we will somehow reclaim a healthy Gaia, a planet, an ecosphere, ecosystem on which to live in harmonious relationship with the other life forms that are here. No, he makes it very clear, and I'm agreeing now. We're the cutting edge. For all the mistakes we've made, the consciousness, the experience has not been lost. It has been shared. But in talking about novelty, he was talking about how the craving for novelty, of course, throughout the course of the 20th century, became greater and faster and more, got to have more novelty. And he talks about the appearance of things like Impressionist art, Dada, Cubism, jazz. And he says, and he made a very, very good point that jazz is the musical craving for novelty outside the bounds of structured meter of keys. It is the expression, the universe's manifestation of its hunger for novelty. So I was given a link to a song this week by my Facebook friend Gary SP. That's all his name is, SP, on Facebook. But it's a great, great jazz tune. And I thought, yeah, you know, Terrence, you were all about jazz, so I'd like to dedicate this song to you. It's called, it's by the Dave Holland and Steve Coleman duo, and the song, it's a jazz cut called Dream of the Elders. What a great title. Let's listen to it. Thank you. Yeah, that was tasty. The song was called Dream of the Elders by the Dave Holland and Steve Coleman duo, a little jazz piece. And kind of fit, Dream of the Elders. I like that. Got a few thank yous to say tonight on the fundraising score. You know that I do what I do out of love. I don't charge anybody for it. And if you want to send me some money or some sweater, great. I'm loaded up on coffee now, thanks to after last week's show. Thank you. You can write to me at Mike Rupert or Rags at 27378 Red Cloud Avenue, 27378 Red Cloud Avenue in Moffitt, M-O-F-F-A-T, Colorado, 81143. If you're on Facebook, you can contact me there. I also have a PayPal account. I'm doing okay. I regret that I didn't raise enough money to get a four-wheel drive with high ground clearance because I have no idea when I'm getting off the property again, especially with the weather this bad. Doug Lewis is in Marin County, and he said he's going to look into getting someone to come by and shovel us out as and plow us out. I'm 400 yards from the road, so it's not an easy task. But you know what? I'm making it, so I have no complaints. I'm having a good day. I took a shower. I'm eating, and everything is fine. But I want to say thank you to a friend from Bayville, New York, who asked to be thanked that way. I want to say thanks to Liz Smith, who sent a bunch of coffee, 2 pounds, and my friend Scott Hall. I'm hanging in there. My ideal way to do this would be to have just enough money to live comfortably until we cross over to the other side. You know, I was offered, when the documentary Collapse was out and doing, you know, extremely well, pirated 2-3 million times in the first year, I was offered a chance to host the show Doomsday Preppers, which is the highest rated show on the Nat Geo channel. And I'm so glad I didn't. But if I'm thinking like a doomsday prepper right now, here's what I would recommend. And I mean this sincerely, as I think it'll do more than anything else. If you have never had a psychedelic experience with sacred mushrooms, with ayahuasca, with DMT, with peyote, I would recommend that by all means you find a way to have that. It is the best preparation I can think of at this moment to prepare for. As a matter of fact, these substances, all of which are naturally occurring substances inside the human body, one way or another, so that they don't hurt you, they don't poison you. McKenna's death was not caused by his excessive use. His brain tumor was not caused. All the doctors were uniform on that. Don't be afraid of it. It won't hurt you. But what is important when you do have these experiences, you should be with someone who has had the experience, and your intent should be very clear that you are there to be shown what is available, what is on the other side, to be shown these realities that have been so brutally repressed by the paradigm, which is now going right down the drain. It's spent all of its resources. So state a clear intention and be clean when you go into it. You know, I normally fast and stay off everything for a day or two before I do these things. But they are the best preparation, and here we are in excellent company. We are in the company of Aldous Huxley. We are in the company of Graham Hancock. We're in the company of Terrence McKenna. We're in the company of shamans. We're in the company of Joe Rogan. We're in the company of me, you know, and so many people. And this is the best doomsday prep that I can think of now, because I can guarantee with the events that are coming, you will not be able to take any cans of baked beans or a case of 223 ammunition or a water purifier with you. This ecosphere, this planet upon which we live, has been exhausted. And I do not believe that even hoping for, a fifth-dimensional miracle that where some technology would come and we could somehow restore all of this, the species that are leaving the planet now with the extinctions are also leaving this Cartesian Newtonian prison in which we have lived. And, you know, it's just hard. It is difficult to watch, but I feel a great lightening of the load. You know, for as long as I have been alive, which is 62 years, it'll be 63 years, February 3rd, I have never felt fully comfortable. I've always felt like something is wrong. But as I sit back, and if I try in my mind, and it's not difficult now, to sit back and say, okay, consciousness, we've talked about the particle physics and the science, which clearly show that vibration and consciousness determines physical reality. That's hard science now. We know that. Can't be disputed. That we have thoroughly explored, and McKenna's point, Terence McKenna's point, was so great, where he said we had to separate ourselves in order to be able to dissect and understand, which is, if you will, and here I'm summarizing a lot of teachings, the God experience is to experience all things from both sides with the true understanding that nothing real can be harmed, and that much is learned. And if we look at the history of the universe in the time that there was plasma before there were even atoms, and how quickly events are unfolding now, what we are seeing clearly is the limits, the absolute limits of living in a physical Cartesian 3D reality. And yet, we so hunger in an archaic way for the wisdom of the elders, the long-forgotten knowledge, to revert to the archaic, but not to go backwards, but to go forwards. And I'm really coming to believe that that is what is next for us after we're all dead from the Cartesian Newtonian standpoint. And I knew that there would come a time like this. You know, people who have listened to me lecture for years have heard me say there's going to come a point at which somebody hits the switch on the whirring blender and you can't pick a flying little chunk of carrot from a flying little chunk of kale in your smoothie, in your juicer, and it's not important to. And that's what Terence McKenna was talking about. I'm exceptionally grateful to him. I'm exceptionally grateful for the time that I spent in Northern California, which I know spiritually was a way station on the way where these doors were opened. I just did a radio show in Occidental where Terence McKenna used to live with my dear friend Matt Savinar. We'll have a link up next week where I talked about the McKenna legacy some more. And I'm here with you. I'm still your scout. I'm still tracker of truth. But take it from me. Everything is out of control. Nothing is under control. And the human race has been overwhelmed. And my response to that is, woohoo! Michael C. Rupert, Tracker of Truth on the Lifeboat Hour Progressive Radio Network. I will be back with you with love next week. Everybody, stay warm. Good night.